the goddess of story.
I'm hungry, Susanoo replied.
By the river was a great wide open field, and this, they determined, would be the battlefield.
We love story!
It's time for the apple seed, filled with stories for you and your family, all kinds of tales from all kinds of tellers. I'm Sam Payne. What a pleasure it is to be with you. And every time that you tune in to bring these stories into your home and into your heart, we're just thrilled. And today, it's an hour filled with animal stories, mostly. Animals make a big part of many people's lives, between pets, farm animals, and food. They're everywhere. Maybe that's why we like stories about them. Whether they're real stories about old pets or fantastical stories about animals that talk, everyone has at least one story about an animal. And many myths, especially creation myths, are based on the actions of animals. And, of course, a lot of animal stories are really stories about people. And we've got some of these stories today from a variety of tellers like Sarah Malone and Ishu Bumpus and Joan Stockbridge and more. We're going to begin with a story from Sarah Malone. Now, she's a bilingual storyteller from New Mexico, and she's been working as a storyteller for more than 30 years. And she uses her stories to raise money for various causes centered on creating peace. And in addition to storytelling, she keeps bees and brings them to events that support the environment. And this story here works to promote peace through the example of coyote. Before humans ever walked the earth, all sorts of animals shared the planet, says this story. At times, they were kind to one another, but other times were full of contention, full of war. That is, until coyote showed them that there was no need to fight when the world was so full of beauty. Here's Sarah Malone with a story called Peace Song. Happy to bring it to you here on the Appleseed.
In the beginning, the Creator made all manner of people, except for the two-leggeds like you and I. He made the four-leggeds like bear and bobcat, raccoon and rabbit, and the flying people, buzzards and bluebirds, meadowlarks, dragonflies, and wasps and even butterflies. And of course, there were many creeping and crawling and slithering and swimming people, too. Those are the people that we refer to nowadays as animals. Now, these animals were much like people in two ways. One, they could speak to one another. And two, they could argue with one another, find fault with one another, and sometimes even go to war with one another. Now, this was true of all of the people of that time, except for one, and that was a four-legged named Coyote. For Coyote was too busy singing songs and making them up as he went. He would sing songs about everything that pleased him, and much of what he saw in the beautiful world around him did. Things like red flowers blooming in the mountains. And even though he couldn't sing all that well, he would make up a song. It might go like this. Ah, oh, the flowers are red, the flowers are red, the flowers are red today. Ah, oh. Or if he saw rain clouds forming way off in the west, he might sing like this. Ah, oh, rain is falling, rain is falling, rain is falling in the west. Ah, oh. Now, one day, Cricket happened to be down by the river to get a drink of water. She was there at the very moment when Bear, who was hot, decided to take a running plunge into the water and freshen up. And Bear, not paying any attention to where he was running, stepped right on Cricket's little toe. Ouch! She said, "You mean Bear, you're nothing but a big old oaf and a fat one to boot." Now, Bear didn't like that one bit, and he turned around and said, "Who do you think you are speaking to me, Bear, like that?" And Cricket didn't like to be spoken to like that and said, "Why, I'm the most wonderful of all of the insects. I have such a great song." Well, before they knew it, they were having words, spilling them back and forth, calling each other names, until the argument got bigger and bigger, and before either one of them could take it back, they had challenged one another to a war. Why, Bear said, I'm one of the four-leggeds, and my friends will come with me. And why, we can beat all you flying people and creeping and crawling and slithering and swimming people in one fell swoop.
Cricket said, I wouldn't be so quick to make that deduction. Why, I think my friends and I can do very well in a battle against you four-leggeds. And they agreed to meet right there by the river in 4 days. By the river was a great, wide, open field, and this, they determined, would be the battlefield. Well, the only animal in all of the animal kingdom who didn't know anything about this, of course, was Coyote. He was too busy out there looking at the beautiful world and singing songs about it. And so, on the appointed day of the battle, the four-leggeds were on one side of the battlefield, and Cricket and all her friends were on the other. They were warming up. The bears were shadowboxing, and the wolves were baring their fangs. Rabbits were kicking with their hind legs, and gophers were chomping with their long front teeth. As for the other side, they weren't wasting any time either. The bees and the wasps were filling their stingers with poison, and the pinching bugs were warming up their jaws, and the birds sharpening their beaks. It was a horrible sight. All of the animals punching and boxing and making terrible noises. And just as the whistle was about to be blown for the battle, who should come wandering down the middle of that battlefield but Coyote? Why, he knew nothing about the war plans, and in fact he was singing a new song, for as far as he was concerned, it was a beautiful day, and it went like this. Ahoo, what a beautiful day. Ahoo, what a beautiful, 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 beautiful day. Now, the animals got very angry and said, Coyote, what are you doing? Get out of the battlefield. We are about serious business. We are about to have a war. Well, Coyote said, I'm singing a new song. Don't you see? It's very important. I just need to finish it, and then you can have your battle. And as he was saying this, out of the corner of his eye, he saw Mockingbird. And he said, Mockingbird, you have a beautiful voice. Wouldn't you help me sing my song? Mockingbird couldn't pass up that opportunity. And so she began to sing along with Coyote. And then Meadowlark, couldn't resist joining in, followed by Bluebird and Whippoorwill, until all of the birds were singing along with Coyote. Then on the other side of the battlefield, Coyote saw Brother Wolf. Brother Wolf, help me, he said. You have a great singing voice. Brother Wolf couldn't pass up an invitation from Coyote, and so he too began to sing. And before they knew it, why, the four-leggeds and the winged ones and the slithering ones and even the swimming ones, they were all singing right along with Coyote, and nobody really knew which side Frog had been on. But she joined in, too. And after that, they forgot all of the reasons they were angry with one another, all of their differences and grievances. Nobody could even remember why this war was being fought anyway. And instead, they enjoyed singing with one another, and their hearts were lifted high with joy, and they just made beautiful music and harmony.
What a beautiful day. Oh, what a beautiful, 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 beautiful day.
It was after that that the two-leggeds came along, and of course they hadn't been there for Coyote's lesson, and so the two-leggeds still, to this very day, find quarrels with one another, call each other names, fight, argue. Sometimes they even go to war. And they say that Coyote still is trying to teach them the same lesson he taught all of the other peoples long, long ago. And so it is, every single night, in the plains, on the desert, or in the mountains, wherever Coyote lives, every night he sings. And if you know the song, it's a reminder, you can sing along too.
Ah-ooh! Ah-ooh!
Sarah Malone with a story called Peace Song about Coyote, who understood that there was no need to fight when everything around was so beautiful. There's a lot more coming up this hour. You're going to hear from Susan Strauss. You're going to hear from Ishu Bumpus. You're going to hear from Joan Stockbridge and Laura Sims with all kinds of animal tales. But first, how about a conversation with a friend? Stories come into our lives in so many ways, from families passing them along, telling to telling, from the pages of great books, from radio and podcasts, through songs, and of course, through the things we see on screen. And exploring all of the ways that great stories get into our hearts and minds is part of what we love here on the Appleseed. I'm joined by a longtime member of our BYU radio family, and he's been heard behind the microphone talking about movies for hundreds of hours, shall we say. Cole Wissinger.
That's great probably to have accurate. You Thank you, Sam.
Find Cole in front of a good movie. Well, if you're looking for Cole, he's going to be in front of a good movie.
That's where to find it.
Yeah, yeah. And we invited Cole to bring a movie to chat about today, and this is one that, frankly, is a favorite of mine too, right? There's a classic moment in my family. So it actually comes from when I was dating my wife.
Aww.
And she recommended a movie, and I said, is it good? And she said, no, it's funny.
Well, and good, I would argue.
And there are some movies that my ideas about good are sometimes pretty subjective.
Yeah.
But boy, there are some movies that I can without a doubt say, boy, that's pretty funny. And this is one of those movies. We're talking about the classic,
The Emperor's New Groove.
The Emperor's New Groove.
A Disney movie classic.
So the introduction of so many to the talents of Patrick Warburton, right?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. This would be where a more talented radio personality would give you a good impression, but I don't got it.
That's all right.
But it's the deep voice, he's the Tick. He's a couple. He's got just the voice, and he's Kronk.
And
in this
forever
one.
Kronk, right? Yeah, forever Kronk.
Standing alongside Eartha Kitt's Yzma,
yeah,
which is perfect as well. So this, I mean, I'm glad she described it as funny, because this is my go-to for the funniest movie that I think that I've ever seen. And I was a kid whenever it came out. I'm a product of the 90s, and so I grew up in the true Disney renaissance.
Yeah.
So Disney was synonymous with my childhood,
right,
from Little Mermaid through Tarzan. But that's kind of where, you know, your academics on the matters of Disney movie history and the Renaissance. Well, the very next year, they came out with my favorite Disney movie ever in 2000, The Emperor's New Groove.
And what was it that – I mean, certainly we've already talked about how funny it is, right? But what is it that you love about The Emperor's New Groove?
Well, it's the why that it's funny. And it's the first time I was introduced to the idea of breaking the fourth wall, right? Mm. Theatrically, I've never been in a production per se, but the concept is when you build a set, you build three walls, and then the camera is where that fourth wall would be, and that's us looking in on the production.
Or the audience, right? The mm-hmm. audience the is audience. Sitting there in the space where that fourth wall would be.
Well, when you break the fourth wall, that means you're turning to the camera, addressing the fact that this is movie, this is picture, and you're talking to your audience. And, you know, Shakespeare does it in the form of little soliloquies where they branch off, but Emperor's New Groove does it to funny effect.
And that was new for you in that movie.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I'd kind of grown up with your basics of cinema, or just, you know, old movies on Turner Classic Movies, or just your basic Disney. This one was something completely different, and I took to it.
And we talk about Patrick Warburton, right? But there are so many performances that are so fun in The Emperor's New Groove. Take Patrick Warburton out of the picture, and what do you love?
David Spade and John Goodman have the best on-screen chemistry of any of those Disney movies, for my money anyway. Again, a lot of them before that were focused on the romance and does he get the girl at the end, and I could have cared less when I was 8 years old. But the fact that there were these two buddies that started off just hating each other.
It's a buddy film,
for a
right?
reason, right? Like, and so many other movies try to capture culture, you know, oh, they shouldn't like each other for this and this and this and this. But like, this movie does a good job, when I go back and look at it with a critical eye as an adult, of establishing, nah, they were kind of enemies.
Yeah.
They grow to love each other during the course of peril. And
yeah.
they have a lasting relationship after the end credits.
Certainly gave rise to, you know, the straight-to-video release Kronk's New Groove as well, right?
I was so excited. That's one of the biggest disappointments, I think, of my childhood as well, because I knew all of those Disney sequels were bad, right? But I loved Emperor's New Groove so much that I was excited for Kronk's New Groove, Patrick Warburton, more, but it wasn't. And also, we should mention the fact that all those Disney movies at the time were getting television shows as well,
sure.
on the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
The Emperor's New School would be the one associated with this one. Also kind of terrible, but the original movie, that's the one I love.
And one of the things I love about The Emperor's New Groove is that clearly everyone is having such a fun time, right? Not just the people behind the microphones who are doing the voice acting, mm-hmm. but the people who are drawing the pictures, the people who are doing the editing, the people who are – everybody's having a great time.
There are probably more beautifully animated movies from this era, but there's no more imaginatively animated. Again, playing with the idea of the fourth wall, pulling down the map whenever they were on the big chase and saying, well, it doesn't really make sense. But
That's
all the
right.
way
yeah.
through it, the way it tracked, the tracking shot we got through, and then just the big scope of the setting of that Central American ambiguous place where he's the
right.
emperor of. And
everybody's having a great time except – I guess I better qualify that by saying everybody's having a great time except Sting. Right? Sting, who wrote My Funny Friend and Me, the song that plays over the credits.
In the credits.
They've got a pop song after every over the credits of every one of those.
Every
songs,
single one.
Right?
And it's a star of the age, and they just kind of stick it in there. But Sting, this is probably why it's one of the symbolizes of the end of the Disney Renaissance, is because it's not a musical. It's just got the Sting song at the end.
That's right, yeah. Well, what a fun film. The Emperor's New Groove, bringing back a lot of memories here with Cole Wissinger. These are such fun days because you can access your favorite movies or movies that you haven't seen in a while, movies that, you know, the answer to, gosh, I haven't seen that film in a long time, I wonder where I could find it, is probably, well, on the screen that's in front of me right now.
Go ahead and look.
So go ahead and look. We invite you to The Emperor's New Groove. Happy to talk to Cole Wissinger about a favorite film here on The Appleseed. Great stories come into our lives in so many ways, through the pages of books, from movies that we see, podcasts and radio shows that we listen to, and of course from stories that get passed down from teller to listener, sometimes over generations and generations and generations. A pleasure to talk with Cole Wissinger there about The Emperor's New Groove. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with a story from Susan Strauss, A Wolf Story, here on The Appleseed. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's such a pleasure to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. Before the break, you heard a story called Peace Song from Sarah Malone. And you heard a conversation with Cole Wissinger about the film The Emperor's New Groove. It's stories about animals today. And up next, we've got a couple of brief stories. One from Laura Sims, who tells stories about animals from all over the world in a collection called Four-Legged Tales, Animal Stories from Here and Away. But before that, we want to get to a story from Susan Strauss. This is a wolf story from an entire collection of wolf stories. We'll have Susan set it up for you here on The Appleseed.
Two wolves, Gire and Frekke, always guarded the throne of Odin, the father god of Nordic tradition. The wolves earned this position of honor because their strength and ferocious loyalty were unmatched by any other animal. The wolf's place as the predator in the chain of life was also respected by Norse culture. In the beginning,
When the Ozagods were bringing the first sense of order into the world, Sol and Mani, two beautiful children, were taken from their father and sent into the sky to drive the golden chariots of the sun and moon. The Ozagods gave the children this task in order to punish their father, for he bragged about their beauty constantly. At first, Sol and Mani wandered where they willed throughout the sky. But their path was sent into a counting of days and years by the hag of death, Gulveig. She unleashed two wolves into the world, Skoll and Hati. The two leapt into the sky to swallow the sun and the moon, but neither Skoll nor Hati could catch the sun and the moon. It is told by Saga, the goddess of story, that if they ever catch the sun and the moon and swallow them, the world will come to an end. But it is just because Skoll and Hati chase the sun and the moon that they move, and day and night and day are constantly moving, day and night, life and death, death and life. And all of the animals, all life on earth, the deer are fleet on their feet. Because the wolf is at our heels.
Susan Strauss with a story from Norse mythology about two wolves with one purpose, released by an evil hag. They are to swallow the sun and moon, and they chase them across the sky to this day. We've heard about wolves and llamas and coyotes. How about a story about an elk from Laura Sims? Now, centered in New York, Laura Sims is involved with all kinds of great storytelling ventures and projects, and she believes in the ability of stories to heal communities and individuals. When people are having trouble, there's nothing like a story for it. This one is from a collection called Four-Legged Tales, Animal Stories from Here and Away, and it's a creation myth. It's about when animals and people were first sent to Earth. And when they got there, the world was covered in water with nowhere for anyone to live or find food. And it wasn't until one of the animals, elk, decided to do something about it that the world became habitable. Here's Elk by Laura Sims on the Appleseed.
At first, the people and the animals lived in the sky until Father Sun and Mother Moon told them to leave the sky and live on the earth. They did, but the earth was covered with water. They couldn't return home to the sky, so they wept and they called out. No one answered. They floated about in the air, seeking for help in every direction, but found none. So finally, Elk, who was the largest, most stately, most elegant, confident and beautiful of all the creatures, said, "I'll help." Elk dove into the water. Everyone watched him sink, and then they wept again. But underneath, in the water, Elk sang. He sang and called for all the winds. And the winds came from every direction and blew until the waters went up into mist. And at first, there were large rocks exposed, so the people and the animals traveled on rocky places, but there was nothing to eat. Then the waters continued to go down, sinking, all the time elk singing, until the soft earth was exposed. And when elk saw the earth, Elk was so happy, Elk started dancing and singing, and in his joy he rolled over and over and over on the earth, and all his loose hairs clung to the soil. The hairs grew, and from them sprang beans, potatoes, corns, wild turnips, all the vegetables, and all the grasses, and all the trees. And that's that.
A story of elk from Laura Sims, and before that, from Susan Strauss, a story from Norse mythology about two wolves. And we've heard about llamas, and we've heard about coyotes today. And there are more animals coming up in just a minute. You're going to hear a Radio Family Journal entry about snakes. You won't want to miss it. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. Before the break, you heard a story about elk from New York-based storyteller Laura Sims. And before that, you heard Susan Strauss with a story about two wolves, a story from Norse mythology. We've heard about coyotes as well today from Sarah Malone. And we had a conversation with Cole Wissinger about the film The Emperor's New Groove. It's always fun to have a chat with a friend. And coming up now in an episode all about animal stories, I thought I'd share a memory of my own. How about an entry in the Radio Family Journal?
The Radio Family Journal with Sam Payne. A tiny little story for you and your family. Right when you need it. On the Appleseed.
If you go back today to the neighborhood where I grew up, you'll still see the house where I lived, a little white stucco house built in the 19th century. Around it, you'll see newer, bigger homes, a neighborhood packed with homes and yards and gardens. When I was a kid, it was just fields, fields of waist-high grass. And we'd stomp that grass down in labyrinthine paths, crushing the grass until we had built roadways and clearings, towns and cities in the grass. And then we'd get down on our bellies and crawl along those paths, certain that our parents couldn't see us. There might be 10 or 12 of us neighborhood kids working our way on our bellies through the grass, and no one looking out at the field from the yard would see anything but that endless, waist-high grass in the field. Sometimes we'd grab a handful of grass from the left-hand side of the path and a handful of grass from the right-hand side of the path and bend them over the path until they touched and tie them together with a long grass stem, and we'd have a bridge to go under. As long as we stayed on our bellies, we were the secret rulers of the field. And I remember one day crawling through the grass. I was maybe 8, and my brother, nearly 2 years younger, was behind me, crawling along in my wake. And he said something, and I turned around to answer him. And when I looked back at the path before me, my heart froze in my throat. Moving slowly across the path was a big brown snake. Its head had already disappeared into the grass on the right side of the path. Slowly, its long body moved right before my eyes from left to right, silent as nighttime. I held my breath, and after an impossibly long time, I watched the thin end of its tail move across the path and disappear into the tall grass of the field, and then I breathed again. "I want to go back to the yard," I said. "Why?" said my brother. "We'd have to go backward." "Well, go backward then," I said. And he did. We both did. Backed as quickly as we could down the path toward the yard. It seemed to take a long time, but eventually the waist-high grass gave way to the mowed green of the yard. We stood up. I looked out at the field. Part of my brain said surely it wasn't any different a field than it had been all afternoon or even all summer. But it was too late. Every other part of my brain said that the field was full of snakes, that just out of sight, just as we lay out of sight of our parents when they looked on from the lawn, snakes were gliding through the tall grass, black snakes and green snakes and brown snakes, striped snakes and mottled snakes and snakes with diamond patterns and red and yellow and black snakes. I began to feel a little sick. My brother and I didn't stay away from the field forever, it should be said. Not even a field full of snakes was a match for the summer boredom that drove us beyond the borders of our yard. But it might have been the last time we crawled through the grass on our bellies. After that, I must say, we marched along on our feet, sweeping the grass in front of us from left to right and back again, with sturdy sticks. I mean, a field full of snakes. What were we, crazy?
The Radio Family Journal of Sam Payne, a tiny little story for you and your family. Right when you need it, on the Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for that entry in the Radio Family Journal. You know, we always hope that the stories that we bring you here on the show spark memories for you that you can tell with the people that you love. In the living room or around the kitchen table, that kind of storytelling can make for memories that last a lifetime. We're going to share with you a story now from Ishu Bumpus. Now, Ishu Bumpus is a wonderful storyteller and also a wonderful musician. And he began working with kids when he was just a kid himself. At 12 years old, he was a math tutor, and ever since then, he's loved teaching and helping children. And again, in addition to storytelling, he's also been a jazz vocalist and an educator in various capacities, teaching stuff of all kinds. And in this story, he talks about a lion that falls in love. Unfortunately for the lion, his love lets others take advantage of him, and they manage to change who he is in a bad way. Love can be good, but not in a situation like that. Here's Ishu Bumpus with Lion in Love here on the Appleseed.
Lion went out for a stroll one day. Feeling loud and proud, couldn't no one get in his way. He decided that day he was feeling so good, he'd take himself out for a walk in the woods. He was much too wrapped up in himself to see, as he passed by the old great baobab tree, that with his head up high and his boastful stride, he'd gone well beyond the land of his pride. But he had no worries, far from home or near. After all, he was lion, the one others fear. The fresh smell of water led him down to a lake. Admiring his reflection, he leaned down to partake. The water was sweet, the sunset serene. The lake was the loveliest he'd ever seen. But then, shaking him suddenly from his reverie, was a human female of surpassing beauty. She stood by the lake with her dad at her side. The man tried to look fierce, though he wanted to hide. Lion had no concern for this man or his spear. After all, he was lion. He knew well their fear. It was the female instead that gave him pause. Made him want to be gentle and retract his claws. Who would have thought, even in our strange world, that a lion could have fallen in love with a girl? He searched through his heart for the tenderest words, visions of flowers and sweet songs of birds, but she saw only lion, too fierce and strong to be the one to whom she could belong. Desperately he wished she could hold him dear, but after all he was lion, she gave only fear. He appealed to the father, "Make your daughter see how well I can provide. Who is stronger than me?" But this gave the girl's father the upper hand. He saw it as a chance to become a big man. right, my dear. Don't reject him yet. Imagine the prestige to have such a pet. It's clear that this lion is in love with you. Let's find out just what he is willing to do. The greed in the man's voice made Lion sneer. But after all, he was Lion. What had he to fear? So Lion agreed to go home with the girl, to abandon his own and to live in her world. It didn't take long before questions began of how he could change to be more like a man. The neighbors complained of the risk to their lives. They said Lion's talons were bigger than knives. Lion was so in love, he agreed without pause. He let them cut off every one of his claws. Had he done the right thing? It was all so unclear. But after all, he was Lion. He would never show fear. Not long after that, the girl's father lied, said he dreamed of the lion with his daughter inside. She told Lion the family would only have peace if he could get rid of those big, awful teeth. Now, all this made the girl's father look very tough. This taming of lions was real hero stuff. No one knew that the lion was blinded by love. They just saw him as something to be afraid of. So now they would stand at a distance and jeer. But after all, he was Lion. He still saw their fear. The girl cared for Lion but loved her father more. Her allegiance was divided, her loyalty unsure. The father, on the other hand, got just what he did crave, the reputation as a hero without actually being brave. Now, without teeth or claws, Lion really felt strange, and he hated the way that he saw his life change. Instead of him going to hunt or to track, he was only left carrying somebody's pack. Where he'd hoped to find love, he'd found misery and drear. But after all, he was Lion, who once doled out fear. He went back to that lake, nothing left of his fire. This time, his reflection he did not admire. He had lost himself now. He couldn't go home. And so he would wander the forest alone. Lion had tried hard to follow his heart. But where does the heart end to let wisdom start? If your heart and your mind do not act as one, you may find yourself finished before you've begun. So Lion walked on, knowing death lingered near. But after all, he was Lion. He would face his own fear.
Lion in Love, about a lion who lets his life be completely changed for the worse because of his love. Now up next, a story from Joan Stockbridge. She began storytelling after she discovered the uses of stories for therapeutic purposes, telling stories at a violence shelter. And after that, she began pursuing stories for their value in healing. And she uses her healing stories at homeless shelters and crisis nurseries and more. And this story is about Amaterasu, the Japanese goddess of the sun, and her younger brother, Susanoo, god of the storm. And while Amaterasu is kind and loving, her brother is less so. And his actions hurt people. There comes a moment when they hurt his sister, too. And she hides away, and the sun disappears. This is the story, Amaterasu, by Joan Stockbridge, here on the Appleseed.
In the time before time, Susanoo was the storm god. But he was not doing his work. Instead of bringing down the gentle rains, he was flooding the earth with deluge. Instead of gentle spring zephyrs, hurricanes tore across the surface of the earth. The chief god came to inquire, "What's wrong with you? It's all your fault. What? You sent my mother to the underworld." And the two gods began a titanic battle, at the end of which the chief god said, "You're banished." Well, before Susanoo left for the underworld, he thought of his sister, Amaterasu. Amaterasu was the sun goddess. She carried the sun across the sky. Wherever she stepped, flowers sprang up. Of all the gods and goddesses, the Japanese people loved her the best, for she was the one who listened when they called out. I don't know why Susanoo thought of his sister, but as he flew across the heavens, hurricane winds whipping around him, black clouds boiling on all sides, Amaterasu knew she had to get ready. She put on her armor. She put on her helmet. She strapped her sword at her waist. She stood at the edge of heaven. When he drew close, Susanoo called out, "Sister, why are you standing there like that? Don't you trust me?" And Amaterasu felt embarrassed. Her brother landed beside her. They began to talk. She took off her helmet. She took off her armor. She lay her sword on the ground. "Sister, I am going to search the underground. I may never come back. I am hunting for our mother." "Brother, if you do not come back, who will be the storm god in your place? Maybe one of my children." "One of your children?" Susanoo erupted in a rage. He let loose a lightning bolt. He threw it straight at her. Amaterasu turned and ran. She could feel his hot breath behind her, and it gave her speed. She got back to her palace, locked the door, locked all the windows. Outside, Susanoo raged. She could feel the house shaking. She could hear him testing all the windows, testing the doors. She sat in the very middle of her palace. She took out her sewing, began to calm herself by working on a gown for one of the gods. But then she heard, "Greek!" Susanoo's hand was coming through her roof. He was tearing off the tiles. She panicked. She forgot who she was. She forgot she was the one who carried the sun across the sky. She forgot everything in her fear. She bolted out the door, running, hoping for a place to hide where Susanoo would never find her. She ran and ran till she came to a cave. "I'll be safe here." Inside the cave, she found a boulder, and she pushed it up against the mouth of the cave, sealing that cave As soon as the cave was sealed tight, the world outside went completely dark. For Amaterasu held all the light and the sun in her hands. Well, in that dark world, things began to go crazy. There was no difference between night and day. Farmers were left standing in their fields in pitch blackness. Children playing suddenly lost their way home. They cried out, "Amaterasu, where are you? Where is the light? Where is the sun?" But sealed inside her cave, she could not hear. This went on for a long time, until finally those other lazy gods and goddesses lolling on their clouds noticed that the offerings had stopped. They saw that life on Earth was in peril, and they decided to find Amaterasu. A scout soon discovered her cave, and the gods and goddesses came up with a plan. They brought thousands of roosters and let them loose outside the front of the cave. They brought a mirror, the very first mirror that had ever been made. It was made from brass that had been beaten and polished till it was shining like the sun and reflected. Then they brought all kinds of food and good things to drink and musical instruments, and they began to have a party. They were telling jokes, singing songs, laughing, dancing. And inside her cave, Amaterasu heard the sounds of life. It sounded awfully good. She'd been in that cave with only her dark thoughts for a long time. She made her way up to the boulder. She pressed her ear to it. She couldn't hear very much. She decided she would just crack the boulder away just a little bit so that she could hear better, but no one would be able to see her. So she cracked the boulder away from the cave mouth. But as soon as she did that, a shaft of sunlight dashed out into the dark world, and all the roosters crowed. Thousands of roosters crowing all at once, for they thought it was sunrise. The people heard the crowing, looked up, saw that beam of light, and began cheering. "Amaterasu is coming. Amaterasu is back. The light has returned." And from behind her boulder, Amaterasu could hear the people calling out to her with joy and gratitude. Well, that gave her courage. She pushed that boulder away, and from the other side, the gods and goddesses helped pull it. And together with Amaterasu pushing and the gods and goddesses pulling, that stone was rolled away. Amaterasu stepped out into the newly lit world. Staring straight ahead, she saw something amazing. "Who is that beautiful being?" "That's you, Amaterasu. That's your reflection. You're seeing yourself for the first time." Amaterasu gazed at her image, and she saw how beautiful she was. And she promised the gods and goddesses that she would never go into hiding again. She joined the others. They were feasting. They were singing. And suddenly a goddess asked, "But Amaterasu, what happened? You just disappeared one day." And she told them the story of Susanoo. They sent a scout who brought him back to a council of the gods and goddesses. "What's wrong?" a god asked. "I'm hungry," Susanoo replied. An old goddess took pity on him and bought him a bowl of rice. "I'm very sorry to tell you this, but Susanoo took his sword. That rice is full of worms." He cut off the goddess's head. This was too much for the gods and goddesses. "You are banished, Susanoo." They marched him to the edge of heaven, and they made him jump into that void, that empty space between heaven and earth. I don't know how long Susanoo was falling, but when he finally landed, he was on earth, and he was next to a river. Floating down the river was a pair of chopsticks. As you know, Susanoo was hungry. And when he saw those chopsticks, he knew there had to be food upstream, so he started walking up the banks of the river. Soon he saw an old man and an old woman sobbing. The tears were running so thick down their cheeks that they were forming a little stream flowing into the river. And between them was a young woman who was sobbing just as hard as they were. Well, something must have happened to Susanoo in his long descent from heaven, because he did not take out his sword and chop their heads off and eat the rice that was in bowls in front of them. No. "What's wrong?" he said. "Oh, it's a terrible day," said the old man. "Every year the eight-headed monster comes over the mountain and he eats one of the young maidens from our village. We have to sacrifice a young maiden or else he will destroy us all. And this year, it is our daughter's fate." And they began weeping.
"It is not your daughter's fate," said Susanoo. "It may have been in the past that that monster ruled, but no longer. My name is Susanoo. I am a storm god, and I have come to earth to be of assistance."
When that eight-headed monster came over the mountain, Susanoo took his sword. He cut off every head. When he got to the last head, his sword went clank. Susanoo reached inside that bloody neck, and what should he draw out of the serpent but a new sword? This was unlike any sword he'd seen before. It was shiny. It was silver. It was filled with light.
"This is a sign to me," Susanoo said. "I will send my old sword up to heaven, and I will ask Amaterasu for forgiveness. And I will keep this new sword, and I will use it only for good."
And that is what happened. Amaterasu received Susanoo's old sword and freely forgave him. Susanoo married the young woman, and he traveled with her and with her parents, searching for a place to live. When they came to a top of a mountain that was covered with pine trees, Susanoo heard the wind moving through the pine needles. "Ah," he said, "that is the sound of the universe speaking. Here my heart is at peace. Here I will make my home." And so he did. As soon as his house was finished, they all moved inside and clouds boiled up around the house and the grounds. And Susanoo has never been seen on earth again. But it is said, whenever there is great trouble on earth, which is just about every day, Susanoo ascends halfway to heaven, and Amaterasu descends halfway to earth, and the two meet in the middle to see if balance can be restored.
Joan Stockbridge with Amaterasu, a traditional Japanese tale about the sun goddess and her cruel little brother. It's been a pleasure to bring you that tale, as well as a bunch of animal stories today. Peace Song by Sarah Malone, a story from Norse mythology about two wolves from Susan Strauss. Ishubumpus with Lion in Love, a story about elk by Laura Sims, and even a conversation about the Emperor's New Groove with Cole Wissinger. What a pleasure to have had you with us for all of that. You know, you can find us online at byuradio.org/appleseed for an archive of all of the episodes of this show, more than 1,000 episodes and thousands of stories for your listening pleasure anytime you like. You can also download the BYU Radio app for ways to listen to all of the programs produced by BYU Radio. The Appleseed is pleased and proud to be part of that family of programs. You can also subscribe to the podcast. Just search for us by using the Appleseed podcast as your search words. You'll find us. Subscribe for something new just about every day on the Appleseed. Today's hour was written by Trent Horton. Our audio engineer is Stuart Foster. Our producer, Jeff Simpson. I'm Sam Payne. Pleasure to have you with us, and can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for an hour of stories, music, and conversation made for you and your family and brought to you by the Appleseed. The show is a production of BYU Radio. We'll see you next time.
Hi, it's Sam again. Thanks so much for joining us for today's stories on the Appleseed. There will be more next time. We've been bringing tall tales, fairy tales, folk tales, personal tales, historical tales, and more to the air since 2013. We hope to be doing it for many, many years to come. And if you like the Appleseed, you may enjoy The Lisa Show or Top of Mind or Constant Wonder, all shows produced by BYU Radio that you can find at byuradio.org or by Googling the titles of any of those shows. I'm Sam Payne. We'll see you next time. Thank you.